Well, after weeks of Trump demanding that the Strait of Hormuz be opened, and after claiming that the U.S. Navy would escort ships to reopen it, and after claiming that it must be open and Iran will have to be forced to open it, etc., on and on and on for weeks, Trump has now decided to announce the closing of the Strait of Hormuz with a U.S. naval blockade. That's right, I filed this under the "you can't make this up" category. Trump is now blockading the existing Iranian blockade that only exists because Trump launched the war against Iran, after which Iran enacted its blockade that did not exist before the war. So now Trump has added a U.S. naval blockade to the blockade that only exists because Trump launched the war against Iran in the first place. So we were told all along the goal was to open the strait. Now it appears the goal is to close the strait. And of course, whoever is left, low IQ MAGATARDs that are still remaining, there's not very many of them, are cheering this. Even though 3 weeks ago they were cheering, you know, the naval escort announcement. Oh my God, the strait's going to be open, 5D chess. And now when Trump announces that he's going to close the strait, those same people are like, it's going to be closed, 5D chess, man. It's like Trump could announce anything and they would just call it 5D chess. By the way, 5D chess is a term that means Trump screwed up again, made a huge mistake, and we're covering up for it by calling it genius. It's not genius, it's just stupid. So let's go through the stupidity of this latest announcement, which will have, of course, dire economic consequences for the United States and its allies. So this, of course, follows the attempted negotiations over the weekend in Islamabad, where, you know, J.D. Vance showed up and gave a list of ultimatum demands. And then when Iran didn't accept that entire list of demands, J.D. Vance holds a press conference and says, well, we tried, you know, we negotiated and they didn't accept our demands. And so that's it. Well, that's not negotiation, is it? That's not diplomacy. It's nothing like that. It's just an ultimatum. And of course, the ultimatum was basically a total surrender by Iran, which Iran will not agree to. So that's the backdrop to this. In response to that, then, Trump has announced this blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. But as you'll hear here, because I'm going to read Trump's tweet for you, it's more than a blockade of the Strait. Apparently, the U.S. Navy is now going to hunt down any tanker that already passed through the strait, you know, in the last, 6 weeks or so. And the U.S. Navy is going to destroy all those tankers. Or at least that's what's being implied. Let me read it for you so you can see. I mean, this is getting so insane. Here's Trump's message. Quote, so there you have it. The meeting went well. Most points were agreed to. But the only point that really mattered, nuclear, was not. Effective immediately, the United States Navy, the finest in the world, will begin the process of blockading any and all ships trying to enter or leave the Strait of Hormuz. At some point, we will reach an all being allowed to go in, all being allowed to go out basis, he says, but Iran has not allowed that to happen by merely saying there may be a mine out there somewhere that nobody knows about them. This is world extortion, says Trump in all caps. And leaders of countries, especially the United States of America, will never be extorted. Of course, he extorts the world and he deploys the U.S. Navy to seize oil tankers coming from Venezuela, for example, to steal their oil, to pirate ships that might have Russian oil, to invade Venezuela or other countries, to bomb other countries, to initiate an illegal war against Iran, among other things. And then Trump has the gall to say that this is world extortion. My goodness, if anybody's running an extortion racket against the world, it's the Trump administration. Anyway, he continues, quote, I have also instructed our Navy to seek and interdict every vessel in international waters that has paid a toll to Iran. What? So, again, the U.S. Navy is going to hunt down every oil tanker that paid a toll. These oil tankers are going to places like Japan because Japan paid the toll. the toll that Trump was actually bragging about just a few days ago, saying that Iran would collect a toll and Iran would be wealthy and this is our new peace deal. I mean, that was just not 5 days ago or something, or a week ago or less. And now it's, you know, world extortion. So now he's going to hunt down the oil tankers sailing to Japan or the gas tankers sailing to Taiwan or to China or anywhere, and is going to, what, destroy them? Sink them? I mean, who knows? Anyway, he continues, no one who pays an illegal toll will have safe passage on the high seas. An illegal toll? By the way, in case you didn't know, the Strait of Hormuz is well within the territorial waters of both Iran and Oman. So, you may or may not know this, but territorial waters recognized by the U.S. and pretty much all the other countries in the world extend 12 nautical miles off your coast. So for the first 12 nautical miles, which is like almost 14, you know, western miles, that's all your territory. Well, the Strait of Hormuz is only, what, 21 miles at its most narrow point, which means that the northern part of the strait is clearly Iranian territorial waters. And then the southern portion of the strait is Omani territorial waters. So these territorial waters actually overlap. They meet, and there are no international waters whatsoever in the middle of the Strait of Hormuz. So, in fact, you know, if the United States sat where Iran sits right now, the U.S. would claim that the entire strait is their property and that they have the right to charge tolls and control it, whatever. In fact, the U.S. claims similar rights for areas that are up to 200 nautical miles offshore of the United States, including control over energy and, you know, energy harvesting and offshore drilling, etc. So for the U.S. to claim, oh, these are international waters, even the U.S. doesn't even recognize that in terms of its own coastal waterways. By definition, the U.S. would say these are, in fact, territorial waters of Iran and Oman. But anyway, Trump goes on, he says, we will also begin destroying the mines the Iranians laid in the straits. Any Iranian who fires at us or at peaceful vessels will be blown to hell, he says. Anyway, he goes on. He says their navy is gone, their air force is gone, their anti-aircraft and radar are useless. This is the same Trump who, I mean, he said that a few days ago, and then a huge loss of United States military aircraft happened as part of that attempted mission to extract the enriched uranium. Remember that? The largest loss of U.S. aircraft since Vietnam, the Vietnam War. On any one day, let's be clear. So Trump just constantly lying. I mean, didn't he say 4 weeks ago that we'd already won? That Iran was completely destroyed? They just didn't know it yet. Now here we are, almost a month later, Trump continues to say they've been completely defeated, but yet the strait is not open. And somehow he thinks that our Navy is going to resolve the situation by double blockading the Strait of Hormuz. Makes no sense, does it? So how is double blockading the Strait of Hormuz going to restore global energy shipments and, you know, oil and gas and sulfuric acid and helium and all these things? It's not. Now, of course, the word went out to all of the MAGA-tards to start claiming that this was 5D chess by Trump, because they suddenly discovered maritime maps of tankers in the ocean, and they started sharing photos of tankers in the Gulf of Mexico, which Trump calls the Gulf of America. And so all these Trumpsters were all over social media posting an image of the tankers in the Gulf saying, oh my God, Trump's a genius. Now we're going to sell the oil to the world. All the tankers are coming to America to load up on American oil. We're replacing the Persian Gulf. You know, we just took the whole market away from Iran and Saudi Arabia, etc. So the level of stupidity of that is so far off the charts, it's almost hard to explain. But first of all, these people apparently never knew about tanker traffic in the Gulf of Mexico until just now. because they're astonished at a map showing tanker traffic, the same kind of tanker traffic that has been there for decades, right? So not really very much new there. It's the same tanker traffic that's always been in and out of the Gulf because, yeah, we are exporting and we are importing oil. And that's the second point, is the United States of America consumes more oil domestically than what it produces domestically. We're about 7 million barrels per day short. So a lot of those tankers coming to the Gulf of Mexico are actually bringing us oil. They're unloading oil because the United States needs to import oil. Now, does the U.S. also export oil? Yes, it does at the same time. Is the U.S. one of the largest producers of oil in the world? Yes, it is. However, there are different kinds of oil, different grades of oil. The U.S. exports largely what it can't use, and it has to import other grades and other types of oil that are the right mix for the refineries that the U.S. has. And without the imports, the U.S. couldn't meet its domestic demand. So anybody saying that the U.S. is going to replace the Middle East now and just provide all the oil that the world needs, you know, is smoking crack, because there's about 20 million barrels per day that's missing because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. is 7 million barrels per day short, which means, of course, the U.S. can't export 20 million barrels per day. That's not possible. In fact, the U.S. itself is using about 20 million barrels per day, or something very close to that. So there's no excess oil in the United States. And all the MAGATARDs seeing the map with the tankers, they are wildly misreading it. They don't even know what they're looking at. They have no idea. I mean, I saw some people's maps that also included cruise ships and, you know, entertainment vessels and things like that. And they're like, oh my God, look at all the oil tankers. Those aren't even oil tankers, you moron. But whatever, you know, none of this makes any sense. And it's just low IQ people that are supporting this. So the bottom line is, this is going to hurt the world tremendously. Now, the MAGA supporters think it's going to somehow, it's going to hurt China more than it hurts everybody else, but that's not true. And here's why. First of all, China has a massive supply of oil reserves. It's between 1 and 2 billion barrels of oil, I believe. Now, it's not going to last forever. It might not even last a year, but it's quite, I mean, it's a large supply. Secondly, China's power grid doesn't run on oil and natural gas, hardly any. It runs on coal, hydropower, wind, and solar. That's right, China actually is one of the world's leaders in renewable energy sources, and plus they have a lot of coal-fired power plants. So, you know, they don't get coal out of the Middle East, and they don't get wind and hydro out of the Middle East. So China can continue to power its grid quite successfully. Plus, where it needs oil, which includes things like you know, polymers or feedstocks for polymers, polyethylene, a lot of industrial chemicals that China does need, it can also source those from other places. And plus, it can get oil and gas from Russia, which is a neighbor, an ally of China. China also has good relationships with Brazil. And it can even get oil from Canada, among other places. It can get energy from Australia. So China has plenty of supply options, whereas U.S. ally countries like Taiwan and South Korea and Japan, they have very few options. They're screwed, basically. The longer this goes on, the more painful it's going to get in places like Taiwan and South Korea. China doesn't like the strait being closed, but it's not an existential threat to China. It is an existential threat to Taiwan and South Korea, and eventually to Japan's financial solvency, which is already on the brink of destruction anyway. And there are many other countries that are impacted as well. So if Trump is playing this game of chicken, sort of global economic chicken, to see how long Iran can last with no traffic through the strait, I think Trump is going to be sorely disappointed, because Iran can outlast the U.S. and its allies. There's no comparison. After all, Iran has already survived 47 years under economic sanctions, many of which have been quite severe. And Iran has also survived after this massive bombing campaign by the U.S. Air Force and cruise missiles from the Navy, etc. And it's still there. Iran knows how to suffer. They know how to suffer and survive. The U.S. doesn't. U.S. allies are not capable of enduring that. In fact, right now in Taiwan, the head of the KMT party, the Kuomintang, as it's called, just met with China's President Xi and had a really great conversation, essentially about reunification with China. Or maybe I shouldn't use the term reunification, but unification. It looks like Taiwan is increasingly realizing that the U.S. can't protect it and can't provide the energy that Taiwan needs. And really, being an ally of the United States is useless at this point. Just ask Qatar, right? Or ask Bahrain, ask Kuwait, you know? It's useless. And so it looks like Taiwan is going to be talking with China about unifying with the mainland and then having energy and having defense and keeping Taiwan alive under the umbrella of Chinese protection, not the United States. So that's just one of the consequences of where this is going. And speaking of China, if Trump keeps his promise here and has the U.S. Navy hunt down oil tankers that are headed to China, is Trump really going to start World War III with China by sinking Chinese tankers? And if that's what he promises to do, then wouldn't China begin, let's say, escorting its own tankers with its own ships? Wouldn't China take other actions to stop the United States from, you know, these very dangerous escalations? For example, halting all rare earth exports to the United States, or sinking U.S. aircraft carriers or something, you know, which China could do in 20 or 30 minutes, could sink them all. And what about Russia's submarines? And, you know, it brings up the question, too, how is the U.S. Navy going to enact a blockade of the Strait of Hormuz when the U.S. Navy can't even get close to the strait? You know, I mean, yeah, over the weekend there were two U.S. destroyers, or allegedly, it was probably just spoofed identity broadcasts, but allegedly two U.S. destroyers began to approach the strait. And then Iran warned them that they would be attacked if they didn't turn around. So they turned around and they got out of there. And then, of course, that was celebrated as a great victory by, you know, Trump tards, Trump cultists, who said, see, we sailed through the strait. No, you didn't. You got caught and you got warned and you backed off. So how is the U.S. Navy going to blockade the strait? Because if any naval vessel gets within, I don't know, pick a distance, 500 kilometers of the shoreline of Iran, it's going to get hit with drones and missiles. It's going to get hit. So, I mean, gosh, the USS Abraham Lincoln already found that out the hard way, and so did the Gerald R. Ford also. Got its back end blown up. And no, it wasn't a laundry room fire. That was just the cover story. So how are you going to enforce the blockade if you can't even get your ships in there? So the bottom line here is that it's U.S. allies that are going to be screaming for an end to this. Things are going to get far worse. And it's actually, you know, Trump's going to be under tremendous pressure to back off on the blockade, a blockade that the U.S. Navy will not be able to enforce. So my prediction is that the blockade doesn't last very long, at least the U.S. blockade doesn't. And it'll be another Taco Tuesday again. We had Taco Tuesday last week. Seems like a weekly event, you know, it's always Taco Tuesday. So Trump's going to taco down very soon here and chicken out. And he'll say, well, we're going to stop the blockade. If they don't stop their blockade, then we're going to bomb them again. You know, he's going to return to bombing. And then saying, you have to open the strait. Yeah, but you closed it. Well, but we closed it because they closed it. So you want to close. No, we want to open. Well, then you're going to have to meet Iran's demands, which are quite reasonable, actually. In fact, ultimately, the only way that Trump gets through this is if he eventually surrenders to Iran's demands, which so far he seems mentally incapable of doing, because Trump is a narcissist, he's an egomaniac, he's demented, he's got, you know, low IQ, etc. Clearly, I mean, he used to be more sharp, but not anymore. And he's just going to, I guess, take the whole world economy off the cliff into the abyss to avoid having to admit that he lost. That's what it seems like. So, you know, Trump scores another loss for humanity and for the reputation of the United States of America. So that's where all this is going. Stay tuned. I've got some other reports. I've got some other interviews. I've got a lot available for you this week. You can follow my videos at brightvideos.com. You can follow my social media posts at brighteon.social, where my username is HealthRanger, or until I get banned, I'm on X. HealthRanger is my name there. And you can also read my articles and see my very popular infographics at naturalnews.com. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for listening. Take care. Well, we have to give credit to Michael Yon yet again, because he called it months ago when he said that the United States would close the Strait of Hormuz. He said that several times to me during our interviews, and I always kind of blew that off. I thought, no, why would the U.S. close the Strait of Hormuz? I thought, well, Iran could close it. Yeah. But Michael insisted several times. He said, no, it's what's going to happen is that the U.S. is going to close the Strait of Hormuz. And, you know, again, he was correct. And he's saying right now that it's, quote, just a matter of time before they close Malacca and the Singapore Straits. Those who follow my work have seen this coming for years. And he also says the Zionists are threatening closing Hormuz while blaming Iran. I've predicted this many times in writing and on interviews. He's absolutely correct, as I just described. He has predicted it numerous times. He's also mentioned what's called the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which is the opening to the Red Sea that leads to the Suez Canal. And it looks like that strait is also going to be closed by, of course, the Houthis. And when I say close, what I mean is they're going to harass ships to the point where no one will use it. So effectively closed. Not physically closed, but effectively closed. So here we are, folks. Here we are with the, you know, these choke points for the world through which the ships sail that carry energy and fertilizer and plastics and polymers and sulfuric acid and helium and, you know, lubricants or feedstocks for all kinds of industrial processes. All of this, they go through just a few choke points on planet Earth. And those choke points, they're all getting shut down. And so there's actually a bigger agenda here. There's an agenda bigger than war with Iran. It's bigger than Israel's Greater Israel Project, which, of course, they're pursuing that as well. This is an agenda larger than the Trump administration or the American Empire or any faction or nation or political party or power or industry. It's a planetary scale agenda, and that's the focus of this particular podcast here. This planetary scale agenda is, of course, mass extermination of billions of human beings through, well, engineered famine. Let's just call it what it is here. So if you backtrack a few years to COVID, you know that the COVID pandemic was also a depopulation agenda effort that really did not succeed at the level that the globalists wanted. It's very clear they were hoping to kill billions of people, and they failed. They killed tens of millions around the world. And in the United States, at least 1.5 million people, and they injured, you know, around the world, hundreds of millions. But they did not kill billions of people during COVID. They learned a lesson, though. They learned what happens when you order people to shut down everything. Lockdowns. COVID lockdowns. And people complied. Local governments complied. Heck, even churches complied. if you can believe that. The media complied, etc. What they learned in all of that is that they can order energy lockdowns, that they can create a larger crisis and then use it to cause panic and obedience with a new attack on humanity that will shut down global energy and fertilizer and food. To effectively, ultimately, the goal is to kill many billions of people, perhaps half of the current human population. This is what is now underway. So let's back up one more time here. Let's zoom out. Trump is getting orders from powerful globalists, clearly, that tell him keep the war going and close the strait. And so he obediently complies, closing the strait. Israel is getting orders from globalists to say keep the violence going, keep the famine going, interfere with fertilizer and energy production, and Israel is complying. See, there are larger demons than Netanyahu or Trump. Even though Trump just tweeted out himself as Jesus, that Trump thinks he's Jesus now, that he's healing people like Jesus while he's also attacking the Pope, which is hilarious. I mean, I'm no fan of the Pope, but you don't see presidents attacking the Pope like Trump just did, and then tweeting out that he's Jesus, which is insane. But this goes beyond all of that. This goes beyond any religion, any government. And there are larger and more fearsome demons that sit above people like Netanyahu and Trump. And, you know, the leaders of all these other countries, the UK, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, and just those four right there, those are some pretty hardcore demons that run those countries. And yet, they're still the minor demons compared to the greater demons. The greater demons want to exterminate humanity. And they want to clear the planet. I don't think they'll be fully successful, by the way, just saying. But they want to clear out as many humans as possible. And they decided after COVID that this is the only way to do it. Engineered famine. Global shutdown of energy, of fertilizer, food, fuel, all of it. Natural gas, which will ultimately affect the power grid in many countries. You know, the plummeting of industry and manufacturing and medicine, etc. This is the new plan. And because this is the new plan, see, very few people understand this. Most Americans think that this is just about reopening the strait and getting back to business and getting the oil flowing again. That's not Trump's goal at all. Trump's goal is to keep the strait closed. Those are the orders that he's getting. That's why the negotiations over the weekend with J.D. Vance, they're negotiating with Iranian leaders in Islamabad, I believe. It was all theater. Nothing was real about that. It was complete theater. There is no real effort by these leaders to get anything back in place, to lower the price of energy, to open up the supply of affordable fertilizer, creating affordable food in the years ahead. None of that is on the agenda. From here forward, it's going to be, $10 a gallon diesel. Oil is going to go to $200 a barrel or higher. Fertilizer will be incredibly scarce. Food will be very expensive and scarce. Grocery store shelves will go increasingly empty. I'm not saying that they will be fully empty. And especially in America, you won't really notice this probably until later in the year, because we already have sort of the crops from last year that are providing the wheat and the corn and the soy and the rice and everything that's made into all the products that people buy right now. So you have to fast forward at least one growing season and maybe two to start really feeling the famine. And that's what's coming. Even in America, it will be felt here as well. So this is the agenda that I outlined in 2019 in my speech at a Steve Quayle event in Branson, Missouri. It's called the Gen 6 Conference. And there I gave a 45-minute presentation, you've probably seen it, that talks about how Earth is being prepared for a post-human future and post-human colonization. So then the proper way to understand all of this is wars within wars. There is a war against humanity on planet Earth, and within that war, there are smaller wars like Israel against Iran, or the United States against Iran, etc. But even within those wars, for example, in the U.S. domestically, there are faction wars between different factions of the United States government. There's, you know, elements of the CIA that are more with Trump versus elements that are more anti-Trumpers. You know, there's elements of the FBI. There's elements of, I mean, come on, it's a massive bureaucracy, right? You know this, FDA, CDC, USDA. I mean, it's a massive bureaucracy. There's a thousand different factions inside the United States. And, you know, a similar thing is true in other countries as well. So we're talking about wars within wars within wars. But the outer loop, the bigger war, is the war against humanity. And that's the war that needs all of these straits and canals to be restricted, or in some cases completely closed off. The real wars will be centered around choke points that I've already mentioned. The Strait of Malacca, Singapore Straits, like Michael Yan said, the Panama Canal, the Suez Canal, the Bab el Mandeb Strait to the Red Sea, as well as the Strait of Hormuz. And there are waterways that pass near Greenland that are very important, which is why Trump has such a high interest in Greenland. This is also why Trump is interested in taking over Cuba to control the proximity to routes between the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic. That's what that's all about, by the way. So what all of this actually means is that you shouldn't count on the Strait of Hormuz reopening anytime soon, because that's not part of the plan. Not the bigger plan. You see, a lot of people that are betting in the oil markets are betting that there will be peace soon, because they would think that rationally, peace must be within the interests of Trump and Israel and Iran and the world. I mean, surely all the nations of the world want peace. They want to be able to get fertilizer and grow food and have energy and keep their economies alive. You know, surely cooler heads will prevail. What if that's not the plan? What if the plan is to actually kill off half of humanity, collapse nations, turn off power grids, shut down industry? If you think about it, this is really just the more radical projection of the climate change cult. They tried that too, you know, before COVID. They tried that for a couple of decades with Al Gore and others, tried to say that combustion engines were bad and all energy use is bad and carbon is the enemy and we have to decarbonize the atmosphere. You remember all that? I mean, some of that's still going on because they're insane. But it wasn't compelling enough. You know, the arguments didn't make sense. What do you mean carbon dioxide's bad for the planet? Plants need it for photosynthesis, you morons, right? So it just wasn't very compelling. But you know what does cause people to give up combustion engines and using hydrocarbons? You know what works? It's bombing all the hydrocarbon infrastructure or shutting off the choke points. In other words, you don't have to convince people to stop using energy. You just deprive them of it. You deprive them of it. You shut off the world's choke points, and then you let people starve and die. And as long as everybody thinks that this is a necessary sacrifice, you've heard that language among conservatives and Trump supporters, it's worth it to pay $5 a gallon for gas as long as we get rid of that evil Iran, or as Americans say, Iran. See? So then you can actually get people to support, to literally excuse the fact that they're being, you know, exterminated, and to even support the cutting off of energy and fertilizer and food. You know, people will even say, well, I'm happy to pay $50 per pound of hamburger as long as we're winning, you know, whatever that means, because that's the propaganda. That's what people are being told by Trump. And I think there was a decision to install Trump as president because the Democrats had kind of worn out their credibility. And the Democrats were becoming a clown show of transgenderism and, you know, rainbow Fruit Loops and nose piercings and everything. And it just got insanely stupid, like tampon machines in men's restrooms and, you know, just insanity. So it wasn't compelling anymore. But the same globalists knew if they could install Trump as president, then, well, they could sweep up all the conservatives and a lot of independents, too, to go along with whatever Trump did, which was really the same agenda. It's an agenda to shut down the world's energy consumption, fossil fuels. I mean, Trump is actually, he's like the old fat male version of Greta Thunberg, you know? He's the ultimate climate change cultist here, shutting down energy in order to depopulate the world, which was another goal of the climate lunatics. Trump is doing what Al Gore could not do, shutting down the world's energy consumption by destroying the world's energy infrastructure. Think about it. And it may be that Trump himself doesn't even fully realize his role in this overarching plot. And the same thing may be true for Netanyahu. But these people are manipulated by higher forces, funding, you know, money sources, and also probably occult influences to do the bidding of the greater evil. So you see, it's not just that Trump doesn't answer to the American people, that Trump doesn't answer to his voters. It's not even that Trump answers to Netanyahu. Trump actually answers to a greater demon, a higher evil that has the goal of mass extermination of human beings. That's the real agenda here. And once you understand that, a lot of things make sense. For example, the suppression of free energy technology, zero-point energy, cold fusion, or the delays on hot fusion. Or, let's say, the classification of thousands of patents that were describing various forms of free energy technology over the last several decades. Or, let's say, the suppression of, you know, reverse engineering of exotic alien technology, for example, things like that. This all makes sense when you understand that the goal has been to suppress humanity's rise, to keep humanity down, and to just kind of put pause on humanity on a planetary scale until the proper agenda can be whipped up to exterminate half of humanity or more. Because you see, do I want to go there? There's so much more to this story. And I'm not going to cover it today, but you probably have a question. Well, then what comes next after humans? So what is the colonization of our planet? Who or what wants to take over the planet? I don't know the final answer to that question. And clearly there are many theories, but one of the most important things is to make sure, from their point of view, that we don't nuke the whole planet. So yeah, they don't want us to launch a nuclear war, whoever they are. But they don't want us to, let's say, destroy the entire global ecosystem by having a population of 50 billion people where we, you know, clear cut every forest and pave every field and turn the entire planet into parking lots and malls and whatever else. They don't want that either. And I think the 8 billion humans, that number just hit a pivot point for whoever's in charge of all of this. And they decided that, you know, it's just too many in terms of the planet that they want to colonize and what they want left behind. And, you know, you think about the destruction that humans are achieving through microplastics contamination of the oceans, for example. Biosludge contamination of the waterways and soils, and some of that stuff lasts for centuries. We're talking about forever chemicals here, you know, PFAS and dioxins and horrific things like that. These don't just go away overnight. So humanity is involved in the manufacture of, you know, nuclear weapons and pharmaceuticals. There's a lot of pharma runoff and dioxins through polyvinyl chloride manufacturing that comes from petroleum, don't forget. And so the Middle East, the Persian Gulf, and the South Pars Field, you know, from this region comes the molecules that humanity turns into toxic poisons that are poisoning the planet. And thus, for whoever wants to take over the planet next, I believe that they've come to realize they have to stop human access to this, you know, these resources in the Persian Gulf in order to stop our systematic destruction of the planet through all the means I just mentioned. So there you go. This is actually an ethnic cleansing of the planet, or, well, more than an ethnic cleansing, it's a species cleansing to cleanse planet Earth of the human race as much as possible. That's their goal. And again, whether they are biological beings, extraterrestrials, or the original Earthlings, or, you know, there's all kinds of theories. Some people think that hollow Earth, you know, people live inside the planet. I don't believe that one, by the way. I'm just saying there's a lot of different theories out there. But there's also theories that there are interdimensional beings, that there are demons, and that there is extraterrestrial AI, or ETAI, that's way more advanced than our own AI, and that it's kind of like the advanced crew, and it's cleansing the planet to make way for the arrival of the biologicals that will follow many years later because of the limitations of faster-than-light travel and how much energy it takes to move a biological body around space faster than the speed of light versus the much lower energy requirement to push a tiny AI system faster than the speed of light as part of sort of the advanced team. So I know there's a lot of rabbit holes we could go down here. I'm not going to do that. Otherwise, this would turn into like a 12-hour thing. But that's just the tip of the iceberg of kind of where we might be headed. So to put this another way, there's, you know, Trump is at war. Well, I guess Trump is at war with the whole world, and he wants his ego to win at the expense of everybody else on the planet. But Trump is still a minor player in the big picture here. There's a much larger evil that wants all of humanity to be exterminated. And I was posting over the weekend, kind of joking. I said, gosh, I hope they don't read X, because if they read X, they'll probably, you know, accelerate their extermination agenda of humanity because of how stupid people are. And I said, oops, too late. Of course they're reading X, you know. If it's an alien AI system, they're monitoring all communications and they see how dumb everybody is and how destructive humanity has become and largely what a failed species humanity has proven to be in many ways, with some saving properties, let's say, but overall, you know, a species that has really failed to explore its real potential. And so, whoever they are, they've come to realize there's no saving humanity, and it's no longer worth any effort to breed with humans because, you know, the dumbed down part just brings everything down to be so stupid that even a half-breed cat, you know, isn't smart enough to function in a sustainable way, you know, to be a citizen of the cosmos, etc. So I think they've given up on humanity. And now it's the extermination phase. Yeah, I know, that's not great news, maybe, to hear. But there is good news. I don't think they can kill everybody. That's the good news. They can't kill everybody, although they will probably try. Trump's making it easy for them because he's destroying the infrastructure that keeps humans alive. So just Trump alone could get a couple of billion humans killed. And, you know, Netanyahu, of course, is a genocidal lunatic. But the bigger picture is it's going to be way beyond just, you know, a few million deaths or hundreds of millions of deaths. It's going to be billions. Although, you know, the time scale of this could be pretty stretched out because if you think about it, whoever's planning to colonize the planet after us, they have a pretty long timescale perspective. You know, they think in millennia or centuries, not in days or months. So their plan may not even come to fruition in our lifetimes. But we are living through the early phases of it, which is the extermination phase. So there you go. It explains the fluoridation of the water supply. It explains the COVID jabs. It explains the bioweapons. I mean, come on. It explains the pesticides, the herbicides, the gender benders, the infertility. It explains why Bill Gates is doing everything he's doing. Because if anybody's talking to aliens, it's Bill, you know. He looks like one of them. You look around, and if you think about it, everything that's being done by the governments of the world is trying to get you killed. Think about it, or to make you infertile. And they're always trying to trick you, like, here, take these jabs. You need them to be safe. Oh, it's a trick. Oh. They're always trying to trick you. Here, eat this food laced with, you know, infertility drugs, laced with pesticides. Oh, here, take these pharmaceuticals. Oh, it disables your brain, makes you dumb. So you can't function, you know? Oh, they tell you, be afraid of the sun. Don't get any sunlight. Yeah, so you die earlier with chronic degenerative disease, vitamin D deficiency with turbo cancers and diabetes. I mean, everything is designed to trick you to die, if you think about it. Everything on the news, everything on TV, all the commercials, the ads, the CDC, the FDA, the government, just about everything they tell you is a trick to get you to die. And the government wants you to die sooner just for financial reasons. They're bankrupt. They can't afford to pay your Social Security if you keep living. Your Medicare, pensions, come on, benefits, you know, disability. They can't keep paying all that if people keep living. Of course they want you to die. Why do you think they still have mercury approved in dentistry? They want to poison you. Obviously. And I know somebody's going to say out there, well, I don't believe it. It doesn't require your belief. It doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. What matters is whether you can survive it. I mean, really, that's all that matters. Because humanity has no future if we can't survive this. Because remember, humanity has been slated for termination. And I said it actually 7 years ago now. And since then, all the evidence has come out demonstrating it again and again and again. If you don't see it now, you'll never see it. But humanity has been scheduled for termination. So, of course, get ready for crazy scenarios, like perhaps far worse than you might have initially believed. Maybe you thought things are going to get back to normal. Abandon that thought. That's probably never going to happen. We're beyond things getting back to normal. We're in a whole new territory here of engineered mass extermination. So, of course, having, you know, your own decentralized systems of stored food and emergency medicine and all of that, these things really matter. In effect, they're life and death. So, triple down on all your plans and supplies and all of that. It's going to be rough to make it through this, that's for sure. And we haven't seen anything yet in terms of the hardship that's coming. While this is happening, of course, I'm going to stay online as long as I can and bring you good information and also educational information, you know, decentralized knowledge and downloadable books and audiobooks and documentaries I'm working on, lots of things. You can help support us and also help yourself get prepared in a couple of ways. Number one, get backup communications from our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store. And you can find them at SAT123.com. And be sure to ask for their Iridium phones, because those are the most reliable connections. They're all good, but the Iridium has the satellites in lower Earth orbit, so there's less latency. Also, you can get storable food and iodine and other things from us at healthrangerstore.com, as you may know. And thank you for supporting us at healthrangerstore.com. Also, what's happening this week right now is we're running a docuseries with Dr. Andrew Kaufman, or Andy Kaufman. And it has a lot of really miraculous natural healing secrets. And you can get that right now. It started actually on Saturday, but there's one episode that runs each day. So episode 3 is running today. And you can watch it for free with registration. Just enter your email address at brightu.com. That's the word bright, followed by the letter U, brightu.com. And that's got a ton of great information about how you can protect your health using off-grid medicine. He even goes into detail about turpentine, which is another amazing natural medicine that very few people know about, even though it's made from the distillation of pine tree resin. And I grow pine trees as medicine. Did you know that? And in fact, it was just yesterday, I was taking my animals out for a walk, and I'm walking beside the pine trees, and so I grab a couple of pine needles, and I fold them up. You know, they're green and fresh, and I put them in my mouth, and I chew them a little bit, and I kind of suck on them while I'm walking, and I'm getting the pine. I'm getting shikimic acid and vitamin C, and you know, some of the other amazing things that are in pine needles. And you know, pine needles are not exactly comfortable to chew on that much, but you're just kind of making your own pine needle tea in your mouth when you do that. And so I'll have them in my mouth for, you know, 5 minutes, and I'll spit them out. And so every time I go walking, when I grab these pine needles, I'm getting natural medicine. I'm getting nutrition, you know, straight from God, frankly, you know, straight from Mother Nature, right? So these are the kinds of things that you need to know about. If you didn't know that pine needles contain anti-plague medicine in the form of shikimic acid, which is the number one ingredient that's in the Tamiflu drug, by the way. It's made from pine needles, folks. It's just made from pine needle extract, okay? You can grow it yourself for free. But there are lots of secrets like that that you need to know. And you can get that in this amazing docuseries from Dr. Kaufman at brightu.com. So be sure to check that out. And also then you can follow my interviews and my podcasts at brightvideos.com, and then my articles at naturalnews.com. So get ready for the end of the world. I mean, literally in this case, well, the attempted end of the world. Like I said, I don't think they'll actually succeed, not 100%, but probably to some degree they will. So it'll be the end of the world for the ignorant, that's for sure. But anyway, that's what we need to prepare for. So thanks for listening. I'll keep you posted. I'm Mike Adams. Take care. So there's a shocking level of scientific illiteracy out there. And I saw a really surprising example of this from Dr. Naomi Wolf, who I interviewed one time. And I don't know what is her deal right now. She's she's posting pictures of a photograph of the dark side of the moon, which is the side that we don't see from Earth. And she's asking the question, where does the light come from to illuminate the dark side of the moon for this photo? And, you know, you're like, really? How could you be that stupid? So it's called the dark side of the moon because we don't see it. But obviously, when the moon orbits around the Earth, then sometimes the moon is between the Earth and the sun, roughly speaking. And so the sun is obviously illuminating the backside of the moon that we don't see. Obviously. And I don't know if it's that people like her don't understand the term dark side of the moon. It doesn't mean it's always in dark, obviously, because when we look at the moon from Earth, sometimes it's not illuminated to us at all, is it? Right? You know, the new moon, right? The opposite phase of the full moon. So during a full moon, the moon is entirely illuminated from our point of view, which means that we from Earth are looking at the moon, and we're looking at it at an angle that's very similar to the incoming light angle from the sun. So the sun, which is, let's say if we're doing this at night, the sun is behind us, but the moon is in front of us, and so the sun is like a spotlight lighting up the moon, and then we see the entire moon illuminated, and we call that a full moon. But then there are other times in the moon phases, you know, 28-day change of phase, right? 28-day cycle. So roughly 2 weeks later, the moon is, it looks not illuminated to us. It looks dark. That's because the other side of the moon is being illuminated. So obviously the sun is illuminating from time to time the side that we don't see. And the fact that a Rhodes Scholar would not know this is absolutely shocking. It shows the, I don't know if it's the woke idiocy of academia and those who focus on feminism and wokeism are totally illiterate about economics and science and numbers and math and things like that. I don't know what it is. Or if it's just that people are stupid. Whatever it is, it's shocking. And it makes it very difficult to really talk to a lot of Americans about anything related to space travel or gravity, especially gravity, or magnetism, for example. People have no idea how magnets work. I mean, even the scientists, they still don't know. They claim to know, but they don't know. Most people totally misunderstand gravity. There are very few people that understand gravity is not a force. It's simply a distortion of space-time. And that bodies that are orbiting, from their point of view, they're following a straight line because of the distortion of space-time. That's why you don't feel acceleration when you're in orbit. You feel weightless in orbit, okay? It's also why you don't feel acceleration when you leap off a tall building, if you've ever done that more than once. Don't try this at home. But if you leap off a tall building, you feel weightless because nothing is pulling on you. There's nothing pulling on you. So gravity is not a force that pulls on you. That is completely false. Gravity is just what we name the effect of mass altering the space-time fabric of the cosmos. So if you're falling into a gravity well, which would be toward something that has a lot of mass, if you're falling toward a gravity well, you are accelerating in terms of velocity, but you are not feeling any pull on any part of your body. You are feeling weightless. So that alone should make it obvious to people that gravity is not a force, but whatever. People just don't have much of an understanding of that. And then we get to, you know, the Artemis mission, which is it's the laughingstock of the world because NASA, after spending tens of billions of dollars, still couldn't figure out how to have decent video cameras to stream anything. And so nobody believes the Artemis mission, or very few people believe it. Even if it's real, NASA's just got the worst video technology in the world. And so they're not streaming anything that is actually convincing to a lot of people. And that's, yeah, raises a lot of suspicion. And I'm not saying that the Artemis mission is false. I'm saying it's pointless. It's pointless. You fly somebody out around the moon, so what? I mean, seriously, so what? I fly around the sun every year, and so do you. I've been around the sun over 50 times. And so have you if you're over 50 years old, because we're always moving through space. That is not a giant accomplishment. We're all moving through space all the time. So just doing it on a rocket just seems stupid, especially when the toilets don't work, as they did not work. Again, it's like the U.S. government can't make toilets work on aircraft carriers or spacecraft, either one. But anyway, when you see these animations of us flying through space, you know, yeah, these animations, here's the sun and here's the Earth and here's the moon and here's the Artemis spacecraft. A lot of people think those animations are drawn to scale. They think that the sun is like right next to Earth and maybe three times bigger, you know? And it's like, oh my God, people are dumb as dirt, have no idea. There was there was an image showing all the satellites that are surrounding Earth. And, you know, there's, I don't know, tens of thousands of satellites. And if you looked at this image, it looked like the entire orbital space was just filled wall to wall with satellites because it wasn't to scale. And some people looked at that and they said, well, how come we can't see the satellites when the Artemis mission people are taking photos of Earth from space? How come we don't see any of those satellites? See? Yeah, because they're really tiny compared to Earth. These satellites might be, a lot of them, like 1 meter or less in diameter compared to the size of the Earth. You're not going to see them in a photo of the entire planet. But people don't understand that a lot of these animations and a lot of these images, they're not to scale, obviously, because if it was to scale, you know, number one, the sun is just, in terms of diameter, hundreds of times larger than Earth. And it's also extremely far away. So far away that if you put the sun and the Earth in the same photo, you know, the Earth would be like one pixel. It would be a little tiny dot. And the sun would be, you know, a few pixels, a little tiny dot. Also, I mean, a bigger dot, but still tiny in the overall picture if you were to do it to scale. And it wouldn't show anything. So they have to make the sun bigger and the Earth bigger and the moon bigger to kind of depict what's happening in this image. And again, a lot of people think that that's real. Just like they believe all the, you know, virus photos and everything. Like, this is SARS-CoV-2, you know. This is your body's immune system, you know, capturing a virus. It's all CGI. It's all animations. None of it's real. Because they can't see viruses on a microscope. Because the wavelength of light is too small to image the, you know, like a 1 micron viral particle or whatever. And, you know, the physics, it doesn't work. So they have to fake everything. Anyway, the bottom line here, folks, is that there are a lot of otherwise well-educated people in American society, people who are authors, people who are researchers, people who have PhDs, who are just dumb as dirt. They don't know much about reality. They don't know how anything works in the world around them, in the cosmos. And it's absolutely astonishing. And, you know, how do we function as a civilization if our so-called smartest people are just ignorant about very basic things? You know, I don't claim to be an expert on everything, but I understand the basics of almost everything that's necessary to make our world work. You know, you and I mean, we can talk about everything from physics and basic chemistry and basic economics and basic geopolitics and basic, you know, military weaponry and basic technology, computer science, AI, etc. We know the basics of all that stuff, or even anthropology or history or what have you, or even psychology. We know the basics. A lot of people don't even know the basics. So keep that in mind and thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care.
If you look at history, think about the eugenics movement, the technological movement, you know, sort of like the techno-futurists, the people who were transhumanists. I mean, when you add all of this together, this is very scary. When you look at some of the tech billionaires and what their agenda is and what their beliefs and values are, it's deeply concerning and scary. They don't have human life at the top. They have not only profit, but they have their own warped vision of a future that for me is very dystopian. I think that's the great danger that we're seeing right now.
Welcome to part two of my interview with Chris Hallaly, and his organization, DD Geopolitics, is very popular on X. And he's a very bright person who has really, I think, insightful analysis of what's happening in our world. We already talked in part one of this interview, and if you missed that, it's at brightvideos.com. Here in part two, we're going to talk about some economic issues with robotics and AI replacement of human jobs, in addition to other things. So welcome back to the show, Mr. Hallaly. It's great to have you back.
And thank you very much.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned in your introduction in part one of some communist teachings. And whenever I talk to Americans about communism, they say, well, communism doesn't work. We have free markets. And then I have to laugh at them. We don't have free markets. We have rigged markets. And there has never been a better example of the rigging of markets than what we have right now. Even our president, I think, is rigging markets with his tweets, causing, you know, commodities prices to go up or down, or oil prices to go up or down. Can you talk to us about what are the problems with our so-called free market economy? It's really more of an oligarchy, or how would you describe it?
Certainly, I think that I think that the capitalist system as we have it now, you're right that this is not a full free market, and it really never has been. But there has been always a tendency towards monopolization. It was a problem in the earlier part of American history, especially after the Civil War period, where you had the big robber barons that consolidated a lot of the industries under their control. People will think of the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, you name it. There's so many of them, the Vanderbilts. When you analyze it, that then we had a part of US history where we had, for example, the antitrust movement. We have to break these big trusts. You have to break these big corporations. There have to be some mechanisms in place from the government level to ensure fair competition on the market. Well, of course, we saw over time there was an erosion of that. And once again, we're back at this place where, for example, I sometimes highlight this for my students. You have all of these products in the supermarket, and it ends up being only 11 major companies or 10 major companies that actually own amongst themselves all of these different products. So people assume that there are all of these different companies, when in reality, there are massive monopolies, tech monopolies, agricultural monopolies, pharmaceutical monopolies, you name it, that you have these big. So we don't actually have free and fair. What we end up having is subsidies and preferential treatment for some of these major companies. And that goes at the government level as well. Think about the people around Trump who have given campaign money, and he'll bring in Boeing and Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and all these companies to help, finance the war effort. He'll bring in the pharmaceutical companies, and especially we saw that in the first Trump administration with the onset of the pandemic, that many were very concerned about Operation Warp Speed and all these big pharma. So in a sense, what people have to understand is free market in the classical sense might actually work, but there's never been an attempt to do that because the tendency is always towards monopolization. If I get more money, why not buy out my competitors? Why not buy out the mom and pop shop if I'm Walmart, or put them out of business? They're my competition. So unless we have mechanisms to prevent that or to protect that or to really allow for free market, it's not possible at this point for that to even happen.
Yeah. Well said. What the U.S. government did to Standard Oil decades ago would never happen today. Even what the FTC did to Microsoft in the 1990s would never even be attempted today. And in my opinion, if any company should be subject to a regulatory breakup, it would be Google because of their extreme domination in search and other products. But it's even worse, I think, than what you described, because you mentioned Big Pharma. That's a great example. But Trump has gone into business with Big Pharma, with Trump RX. So this is something, obviously, this is not, a free market economy. When the president of the United States licenses his name to go into business with an industry that he's supposed to be, well, at least through the executive branch, supposed to be regulating Big Pharma. Instead, he's saying that it's a success because he's partnered with them to lower the prices of things like weight loss injections, which is actually only spreading the widespread use of these drugs that I would argue have some very serious side effects, including cancer and blindness. And so we have a president that's making money off of the proliferation of drugs that have a very dangerous side effect profile. To me, that doesn't look like a free market situation. That looks like corruption to me. Well, what do you say?
100%. I mean, we had a president who came in with the sort of with RFK Jr. He brought him in. They had the Make America Healthy Again, right? The MAHA movement. I haven't seen any of that really play out.
No.
If we're going to do that, we got to break up not only the big pharma monopolies that exist, but also big ag. We haven't seen really any push on that. The subsidies are still there. The money is still flowing to many of these things. And as you rightfully point out, the Trump brand going into pharmaceuticals. I mean, I personally am very skeptical of big pharma.
Me always too. Have been. Yes.
Always have been. And I don't know how anyone can put their trust in big pharma when we've seen over the history what pharmaceutical companies have done to human beings. Not only testing on them, not only experimenting, but also the crazy viruses, diseases, pathogens that they've created and cooked up so that they could create an antidote or whatever they could do to make even more money. I mean, this is the cycle.
Yes.
This is the cycle of money that they want ultimately. So I think that it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. In fact, American food, the consumption by American people of American products is so unhealthy. It's unbelievable. Some of this stuff is outright banned in other countries. Think about the dyes, the preservatives, the additives. all of that. So when you compound that, so you create a health epidemic with people getting obese, people having all sorts of ailments, all sorts of absolutely preventable issues. You put a burden on the healthcare system, which allows you then to have the insurance companies make a fortune. Then you bring in Big Pharma, which is able to then give you Ozempic or whatever it might be as a sort of remedy for that. All of this is artificial. All of this has been created. Our ancestors didn't have these issues because they had good food, clean food, healthy food. And now you've seen, you've created this cycle of dependency, and you've created an industry that actually is a combination of multiple industrial outputs together to create big money. I mean, yeah, why?
It's also part of, I think, the dumbing down of the American people. And you know, you don't know me, but this is my smoothie. This is what I drink every day. This has turmeric. This has sulforaphane from broccoli sprouts. Of course, you know, I run a food science laboratory, mass spec lab, and you know, I have an encyclopedia of knowledge about these kinds of things. So I'm drinking anti-cancer, neuroprotective, you know, substances every single day. But the typical American thinks that it's healthy to order a salad at McDonald's next to a Big Mac. And so we have this mass diseasification of America. And unfortunately, there are cognitive effects of that. The average functional IQ, I would argue, of an American adult today is much lower than it was in the 1970s. And I don't mean to dominate here, but this actually leads me, this is a segue to what I wanted to ask you about, which is about the rise of AI, which is the automation of machine cognition to replace partially some of the human cognition roles, such as answering customer service emails or customer service phone calls, which is now well automated. It seems to me, you know, I mean, call me a conspiracy theorist, but it seems odd to me that this engineered global famine that we talked about in episode one of our interview is happening right at the same time that it's kind of convenient for these powers, the powerful corporations, to get people out of the way and replace them with machines. What do you make of that?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at history, think about the eugenics movement, the technological movement, you know, sort of like the techno-futurists, the people who were transhumanists. I mean, when you add all of this together, this is very scary. When you look at some of the tech billionaires and what their agenda is and what their beliefs and values are, it's deeply concerning and scary. They don't have human life at the top. They have not only profit, but they have their own warped vision of a future that for me is very dystopian. It's not utopian. It's not humans living a fulfilling life. It is much more a techno-feudal future. I think that's the great danger that we're seeing right now. And for me, absolutely, I think that technology can be good. It can be harnessed for good. But I think that it's being harnessed right now, number one, to create a surplus humanity, a surplus population that's going to be relegated to ghettos and, you know, favelas and slums and basically just kind of cordoned off. And what are we going to do? We're going to increase police militarization. We've already seen that over the course of the past decades. Very scary stuff. The militarization of the police. And so you're going to see more violence on our streets. You're going to see more drug addiction, more despair, more crimes of despair. And it's not a flourishing. In fact, it's a flourishing for an elite few at the expense of the many. So I honestly believe that all of these wars, the artificial famines we're seeing, the artificial scarcity we're seeing, plus these sort of, you know, transhumanists in these kinds of positions. And really, if you add in even the Epstein dimension, which is even darker and scarier, I think, when you add in all of that, you see that these people are going to plunder the earth for themselves at the expense of the majority of humanity, which they don't even need anymore because they're going to automate things. And I would add, AI doesn't only do the technical aspect of production and things like that, or maybe, for example, using it for answering or writing papers and answering questions, but it's used for surveillance. We are in sort of the Minority Report phase of our existence. We're getting into a part of our existence where all of these technical goods, and that's why I don't use AI, I don't use any of this, you know, call function, you know, speaking to some, you know, whatever it might be, some assistant, technical assistant to open my lights or things like that, because all of that is regulated and controlled by entities that use that to strengthen their power, to strengthen surveillance. We have to be very careful about this. I mean,
yes.
We we're at the precipice of a situation where it's going to be even scarier than 1984 in Animal Farm, I feel.
Yeah, I don't have any automation or surveillance devices installed in my home or my car or any such thing. However, I am an AI developer, and I build AI platforms that share open source knowledge with humanity. For example, one of my platforms, brightlearn.ai, we've published 50,000 free books that can be downloaded open source. And 200 of them are audiobooks now that people can download. One of them is about hydrocarbons in the Middle East, by the way. So I take an educational approach to using AI, but that's very rare. Mostly the AI giants want to surveil, like you said. They want to control and dominate, and they want to weaponize it, right? Especially in the Pentagon. They want to use AI as weapon systems. But let me ask you about universal basic income, because it seems to me that if you destroy the world's industrial backbone, which is what's happening in the Middle East, and if you destroy the energy backbone and you create scarcity of both energy and food, you mentioned fertilizers in part one of our interview, then what you do is you end up having a very easy way to corral people into systems of control, such as a CBDC or a UBI, universal basic income, or digital food stamps. And then you can control what they eat, how much they eat. You can surveil them. You can limit their use of the wallet, et cetera. And at that point, you've got a captive, enslaved population that a madman like Trump, let's say, could just decide to starve to death or something along those lines. It seems to me we're headed into one of the darkest eras of history here if we don't turn this thing around.
I agree with you 100%. I at first was interested and I delved into UBI back when it was more prominent, I think about a decade ago or so, especially, for example, after Occupy Wall Street, people were interested in it. I remember during the Bernie campaign in 2016, there was some interest in this kind of topics. But in actuality, it has these negative effects that you rightfully point out, which is that it cements control over people, because then people are beholden to whether it be a state or some corporate entity that is giving out this basic income that then can control, for example, with digital food stamps, as you point out, what you're eating, what you're consuming, how much of it. You can then kind of, you know, do the, when you were talking about Israelification, when they did in Gaza, they did the caloric intake for every person,
exactly.
And they basically allowed only a certain supply of food in at the base level of caloric intake. This is satanic level of harm to humanity. So when you're analyzing that, that does not allow for human flourishing. That does not allow for people to really live their best quality of life. What it does is it makes them slaves. It makes them slaves to a system.
Yes.
So I am not in favor of any of this stuff. I'm sure you and your audience are not in favor of any of this stuff.
Correct.
This is very dangerous. This is a dangerous path. I would also argue that the digitalization of all of our currency is also very dangerous, because right now we're seeing some very prominent people that I'm friends with. I know you had Larry Johnson on. He's a good friend of mine. Just had him on the show a few days ago. But a lot of people are getting repressed in terms of their bank accounts, their transactions. For example, people are being pulled off of Patreon. People are being demonetized, deplatformed for going outside of the orthodoxy of, for example, what the US and Israel want. That is very, very dangerous. That cannot be tolerated. I'm a free speech absolutist. I don't mind if you disagree with me. I want that. I love it. I hope we can have robust debates. But when people start to constrict people's free speech and then they take away their stuff because there's more surveillance and everything is controlled digitally and you can take away their bank accounts, now they can't pay their rent, they can't pay their mortgages, this is very scary.
Well, I've encapsulated this concept that you've just eloquently described. I said that everything that the U.S. has done to Russia economically through sanctions and restrictions, the U.S. government also plans to do to the American people. In addition, everything that Israel has done to Gaza, I believe that eventually a regime in the United States also plans to do to the American people. And when we saw then Trump unleashing ICE agents on the streets of Minneapolis, who were, let's just be honest, executing Americans on site, completely outside the rule of law, right? That's when I knew what was coming. And if there is any kind of a protest uprising in America, I could literally see President Trump and Pete Hegseth in another drunken moment declaring that we have to send A-10 warthogs to take down the protesters in San Francisco or wherever. That's no longer a crazy idea. That seems actually aligned with the way these people function. And obviously, I'm very alarmed by this.
Absolutely. And actually, I want to you know, say here, I remember, for example, when January 6th happened, I remember when some of these uprisings happened in different episodes, especially in our recent history. I am not opposed to people, going out there and fighting for their rights. I support it. What I do know is that at every stage, they're really a uniparty. This Democrat-Republican thing, it's all baloney, in my opinion.
It is.
It's a uniparty of war and of big industries and all of this, heinous stuff that we're seeing. It was really the Epstein class. When you're seeing what they end up doing, they end up picking and choosing their battles. But really what they're doing is they're cementing further control, further surveillance, further militarization, the abrogation of our constitutional freedoms and rights. That's the big danger. You said in the first episode that the big danger is that we don't look like the U.S. that fought in 1776 and those big debates between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists that gave us this amazing Constitution that's endured for 250 years. They want to destroy that. They don't care about the Constitution. They're not interested. I mean, I studied the law. They're not interested in the Constitution and our legal procedures and our, legal precedent and common law and our great tradition that goes back to the Magna Carta. They want to destroy it all. They want to destroy it all because they want the rule from above. They want to rule whatever they want and their cronies want. That's the big fear that I have, that all of these freedoms that have been enshrined for so long, they're slowly getting eroded. And we remember the famous quote from Benjamin Franklin, those who give up a little bit of liberty for security deserve neither liberty nor security. That's the sad part. In the post 9/11 world, in the Patriot Act and everything that's come after, Americans, whether they know it or not, are giving up more and more of those constitutional liberties and rights that have been, part of their heritage and that have been enshrined and protected them for so long. They're giving that up for more security, quote unquote. But that's not security. It's greater control. That's the big fear that I have. And I think that they're weaponizing both sides and all of these different sort of, this woke right, woke left, whatever they're trying to do. They're trying to make enemies within so they can further do this. I mean, just look at what Laura Loomer and some of these type of people are doing, for example, against Candace Owens or Tucker Carlson. It's abhorrent. This
Absolutely.
Kind of behavior. She's serving as a foreign agent, but they're trying to destroy America from within. We shouldn't tolerate it one bit.
Yeah, she's, in my view, a total sociopath, lunatic. But there are quite a few people like that. I would add Mark Levin to that class as well, and Ben Shapiro for that matter. But we still have just a few minutes left, and I want to remind our audience that your show on YouTube is called The Chris Halali Show, and they can find you here. Here's how you spell Halali, H-E-L-A-L-I. And then also DD Geopolitics is the main channel on X, and here's the website of ddgeopolitics.com. Encourage you to follow that channel. But Chris, this conversation brings us to the issue of human labor being replaced by automated machine labor in the coming years. Now, I don't believe that robots are going to take over next year. They're just not there yet. Autonomous robotic behavior is extremely complex. It's going to take a few years, but it is coming. When that happens, the entire history of our civilization was built on both human labor and human cognition, those two things. And this is what gave purpose to many people's lives, innovation and building and creating, and it gives you purpose. And if that is taken away from humanity, then not only do the Epstein class then probably decide they just don't need 8 billion humans any longer, but for the ones who are still here, it takes away so much of what gave them purpose in life, at least in our culture. What are your thoughts on not just AI cognition for desk jobs, but then AI robotics replacing human labor in the coming years?
I think it's very possible. I think it's coming. Regardless, we're already seeing, for example, AI and robotics replacing in a variety of domains, especially in transportation, in production lines, especially on factory floors. That classic assembly line is looking a lot different now with robotic arms putting together various components and pieces of cars, tractors, different types and different pieces of equipment. So certainly we're seeing automation over time, as you rightfully point out. It's going to be gradual, but eventually once you lose 100,000 human jobs, 200,000 human jobs, 500,000 human jobs, a million, you have to ask, what are those people going to do? There can only be so many jobs, for example, to repair robotic equipment. There can only be so many jobs to be technical, you know, advisors or technicians or computer programmers or computer engineers, electrical engineers, to do this kind of work on the backside. And I'm sure that eventually they're going to make robots to repair robots. So when you unpack all of that, the human population is continuing to increase. What are all these people going to do? And you have to imagine, if people are idle, remember that the classic quote from our grandparents, you know, idle hands do the devil's work. If you have people who are idle, who don't have good paying jobs, who aren't afforded privileges, who aren't afforded any good quality of life, what are they supposed to do? Will they resort to violence? Will they resort to, you know, crimes of despair? Are we going to see more sort of social breakdown with this technology? Is this technology going to be sort of, you know, boxed in and protected by, you know, basically a militarized police force or a national guard? And then everybody is kind of, you know, in the slums, like I said before, sort of the ghettoization of the world. That's what I really fear. I agree that it won't come quickly, but the trajectory that we're on cannot be disputed. We're already seeing, for example, not only in AI, for example, on the computers. I have been to the battle zone now of the special military operation for 2 years now. I've seen the drones on the battlefield. I've heard them screeching over me, you know, the alarms going off as these drones are coming in. This war between Russia and Ukraine has become a drone war. It's become, yes, a technical war. So when you're looking at that, that's the future. That's what people don't understand. That's the future of what we're up against. We're up against a world where drones will be doing a lot of this work, whether it's in the industry or in fighting, and we're all going to be at the mercy of it. So that's why the front line doesn't move that fast, because you have a drone for every person. Actually, you have multiple drones per person just flying in and trying to hunt them down. We didn't have that before. War before, people had their, you know, their sabers or their muskets and or their guns, and they went in head to head with each other. Now, drones go in head to head, and you have very few humans on the front that can actually move because there's so many drones above. That's the future, and that's the dystopian future that we're headed towards.
And unfortunately, only one tech company in America, Anthropic, said to the Pentagon that you can't use our technology for surveillance or for AI weaponization. All the other companies, Google, Microsoft, OpenAI, like, sure, build weapons, even Elon Musk. All right, we're almost out of time, so in the last minute or so, given everything that we've talked about here, Chris, and I want to thank you for your vast depth of knowledge on all of this, what should our viewers be doing action-wise in their own lives to prepare for what's coming?
Listen, the most important thing in my perspective is we need to come together. We need to build strong and resilient communities. We need to bridge all of these different divides and gaps that have been artificially created from above by this Epstein class. And we need to know that our neighbors we can have each other's backs, because really we only have each other. Up against this elite, we only have each other. Who else do we have? We're waiting for the Messiah. We're waiting for the second coming. It's not happening yet. We have each other now. You know, when people kind of wonder, you know, are we waiting for a hero? Look in the mirror. You are who you've been waiting for. So we have that power. And that power is really, especially in the US, that's the American spirit coming together. We remember these small town halls, these town meetings, people coming together on the commons and that kind of village square. We need to do that across the nation. We need to take back the reins. We need to stop all of the stuff that's going on. This is a train that's running off course, and it's bringing us all down with it. So we need to definitely get together, work, talk to your neighbors, talk to people. I know a lot of these topics are uncomfortable. I remember growing up in the US, my family would only talk about politics and religion, but outside of the home, they said that, you know, average Americans don't like to talk about these topics. Talk about these topics, be open, share the resources, your channel, my channel, any news that you can. Just make people more involved and active, because this is the future. This is the future of your lives, your kids, your grandchildren, and that we really have to take control of that. Only then can we really transform the situation. That's what our ancestors did. That's what the American patriots and the framers did. They all got together all the time, writing pamphlets, sharing things, common sense, you name it. That's what they were doing. They were very involved in their lives with politics and with, you know, the community. We need to do the same. Don't be complacent. Everybody get involved, do as much as you can, and hopefully we can stop this train from going over the abyss.
Well said, well said. I love it. I guess today we can all be Thomas Paine, especially with the digital sharing that's available to us. So thank you so much, Chris Hilali. It's been a pleasure. You're welcome back anytime, and I wish you the best. I hope we all make it through this together as compassionate human beings. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right, take care. And there you go, folks. Chris Halali, just what an extraordinary mind. And I mean, follow his channel. You can tell he's got a lot of common sense, you know, to quote Thomas Paine again, about what's happening in our world. If you missed part one of this interview, you can find it at brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams here of brightvideos.com, the founder. Actually, I built the whole site with AI agents. There we go. But we have to use technology in a pro-human fashion. Otherwise, all is lost. Thank you for watching today, and take care, everybody. We now have vitamin D3 plus K2 plus Aquaman, which is a seaweed calcium, available at healthrangerstore.com. Here, I've got it up on my site here. This is the Groovy Bee brand that we have, which is our in-house brand, healthrangerstore.com. Again, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman. That's the brand of the seaweed calcium in a capsule format. Of course, it's laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and so much more. And it's certified ingredients, of course. And, you know, everything that we build for you in terms of a product is meticulously sourced. And one of the most difficult products to source is actually vitamin D3. It's extremely difficult because it turns out in the supply chain, almost all vitamin D has a bunch of sort of unnamed ingredients in it. And that's what our sourcing people found after a couple of years of trying to source a clean version of vitamin D3 that we finally found and nailed and put it in the formula and did all the lab testing and certification. So now it's available. So this synergistic combination, if you think about natural bone support, for example, or you think about the fact that so many people may not have sufficient levels of vitamin D for just optimal health and immune support and, you know, many other reasons to have vitamin D levels, this product can help you supplement that. And so it's available now, healthrangerstore.com, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman, 60 capsules available, shipping right now while supplies last. And in this environment where global supply chains are getting wrecked, you know, if this is something you want, get it now while we have supplies, because it's becoming more difficult and more expensive to source literally everything at this point. So anyway, thank you for your support. You can also find many other products, of course, hundreds of different products at healthrangerstore.com, including storable food. And right here we have our organic powdered chicken bone broth in a number 10 can, our turmeric root powder, and so much more. We've got so many amazing products for you to choose from, including tinctures, superfoods, storable foods, as well as freeze-dried fruits and vegetables in sealed number 10 cans. That's great for long-term storage. Plus, we have iodine, and that's a product that's moving very quickly because of concerns about, you know, global nuclear war, unfortunately. But you can find all of this. It's all laboratory tested. It's all certified. It's all meticulously sourced at healthrangerstore.com. And yeah, there we go. That's what the vitamin D3 looks like there. Thank you for supporting us, because we need your support in order to fund our platform. And so we can keep bringing you amazing interviews and content and free AI tools for knowledge and so much more. So thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, for healthrangerstore.com.